Welcome to the RepChat Inside Stories series, conversations with creative talent and creative entrepreneurial businesses. We discover the inside stories that inspire and motivate creative people to do what they do.
So we've almost reached the end of the year. And so for this final interview of 2021, I'm so very happy to share the virtual studio with Izzy Fernandez. And Izzy's a very interesting person. She has devoted many years of her life to looking at volunteering and giving back. And she also works full time. Welcome, Izzy.
Thanks, Kathy. It's really good to be here.
Absolutely. And what we'd really like to explore with you is your approach to what I would call the giving back. And I know that all the work that you do comes absolutely from your heart, and you've been involved in so many diverse things, and even your work is about finding opportunities for people. So maybe as a good start is the work that you're currently involved in terms of a volunteering capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. As Kathy said, I have volunteered for a number of years, really, for my whole life, and have worked with different projects. Some of the projects that I'm really close with at the moment include going and working with an organisation in Calais, working with refugees there, primarily men who are in northern France, some who have been there for up to, you know, two and a half years, and then are basically waiting to either kind of seek asylum or come to the UK. And then I also work with an organization called Oasis Hub Waterloo, which has a partnership with something called Jamie's Farm. They have an amazing space in Waterloo in which they've created a city farm, and that city farm is really an oasis of learning and development for young people. I particularly work with children on education days who have been excluded from mainstream school, and we use the animals and different kind of gardening activities, farming activities, cooking, pottery, as a means of, I suppose, helping them come out of their shells and maybe talk a little bit about their stories and their feelings, and see another way of being.
Absolutely. The whole idea of creating different environments for people and showing up. So what made you get involved in volunteering?
I don't want to be someone, you know, that goes on a podcast and says thank you to this person, thank you to that person, but I am forever and will forever be grateful to my parents. My parents both work for the NHS. My mum's a palliative care nurse. My dad is a GP. And ever since being a child, both of my parents have volunteered for various organisations, one of which I volunteer with at the moment as well, which works with disabled children. So I grew up working and volunteering with disabled children even before I was too young to like volunteer. I was still, I suppose, out there with my parents in France or at this other kind of summer camp where we'd take disabled children on holiday, and I was there from an early age sort of playing with disabled children from difficult backgrounds who were coming for a week of respite with their families. So in that sense, I think volunteering really kind of does run in my blood, and to me it is a massive part of who I am. In fact, it is very much bound up with who I am. I think for me, because of my experience and having always done it, I can't imagine a life where I didn't volunteer, because it's just something that I do. And I think it why do I do it now? I think it really, volunteering does also really talk to my own personal values. I suppose it's a slightly chicken and egg in this sense, but I really believe in access to opportunity. I really strongly believe that every single person is the same, in that we are, well, that sounds silly, in that every single person is equal, and every single person has an enormous amount to give. And therefore, I think that, you know, helping others to access their potential, or just being human in situations that you're in with all people, irrespective of who they are or who you are or what they do or what you do, is really important to me.
When we were talking the other day about some of the organisations and projects you've got involved in, it's quite diverse from Calais to what you do now. They're all very, very different. Someone listening to this was thinking, well, I want to volunteer, but what can I do? What would you say to them?
I think one of the things that I'd really, you know, say about volunteering is that there is, particularly now, particularly post-pandemic, there is a huge amount of different opportunities. So if you're thinking, oh, I want to volunteer, I'd almost say don't overthink it. Start with yourself. What are you interested in? What are you passionate about? What are your own skills? Because you as an individual 100% have loads to bring to the table. And if you sort of work backwards from that, you might think, you know what, actually, I'm really interested in animals. Is there an animal shelter near me? You might think, you know what, actually, I don't love interacting with big groups of young people or big groups of people, but I'm a fantastic data analyst or software engineer. There's loads of charities which help individuals learn to code, and that could be young people, that could be refugees. There are some fantastic organizations out there that I've know of and have worked with. So I think that what I would say is that the post-pandemic world really enables a couple of things. It enables you to think about your own skills and actually volunteer through your laptop if that's what makes you comfortable. And I think that the other thing is like being brave, accepting that sometimes volunteering will be going out of your comfort zone. I think particularly when I first started going to Calais in 2016, I wasn't really that sure exactly what I was doing. And I had lots of, you know, friends and people in the UK who'd say, oh, you know, be careful. And, you know, even now when I go, my granny always sends me a message and says, it's amazing what you're doing, I'm so proud of you, but please be careful. And I do think, obviously, that situation, arguably, we need to be more cautious than you might in other volunteering situations. But I think for everyone, there's going to be, particularly if you haven't volunteered, everything, you know, to start with might feel a little bit like it's a bit past your comfort zone. And I'd say one of the best things about that is that you tend to meet really great people and really like-minded people. And I think that that's really important as well.
Yeah, I really love the fact that you say, you know, be brave, don't overthink it, just get involved and lead with what you have to give.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about the Calais experience. What was your involvement there, Vivi?
So in Calais, I've worked with a couple of different organisations. The first time I ever went was in 2016, which was when there were nearly 10,000 refugees in Calais. And the refugee camp was a real sort of shanty town in a sense. It had infrastructure. You could get amazing Syrian food there. There were generators in the camp, and it's a very, very different landscape to that now. It's very much more desperate. I, when I'm there, work with an organization called Mobile Refugee Support, and they are a predominantly male charity which provides means of communication, i.e. generator charge in the camps and direct and sort of the most necessary means of aid. So that's tents, that's sleeping bags primarily, that's good outdoor men's shoes, coats, trousers, jackets, that type of thing. So the way that that organization works is they work very closely with the communities in Calais and Dunkirk, and they actually, although they operate primarily in Dunkirk, and they go to a spot which tends to be where a certain community, primarily Kurdish, are living and staying at the time. And we go in with the van each day, set up generators so guys can charge their phone, they can charge their power banks. We set up a Wi-Fi in the van so that, again, they can contact their families, because communication is one of the most important but most easily forgotten things. That is a lifeline. It's, you know, the guys would almost prefer to go without a meal or a couple of meals than not have access to their mobile phones, because their phones are, you know, I've sometimes have had them show me their nieces and nephews and wives and girlfriends and mothers on FaceTime. That's their lifeline in that sense. So doing that, and I think the other thing that Mobile Refugee Support does particularly well is they are very much embedded within the community. Those who run the organisation have been in Calais for years and Dunkirk, and they speak the local languages. So they speak Kurdish and they know many of people there, and really treat them as humans.
That's the key thing, isn't it? It's that humanity. We were having that discussion about, you were saying that the conversation you have is as important as whatever you're providing, whether that's coat, a meal.
I think it is that. And the conversations are so often, you know, just that couple of minutes that you take to say to someone, oh, hi, how are you? How's your day going? What's your name? How old are you? And those types of interactions, you know, it would even having the last time I was there, even having been in the camp for a few days, there were certain guys that, you know, I got to know over those couple of days even. And, you know, they would we'd talk about how old we were. Many of them are a similar age to I am. And they'd often find it funny because I look really young. I know this is a podcast, but Kathy can testify. But a lot of them look really old. And really old compared to your average 25, 26-year-old person that you'll see in London, because they have had very, very different types of lives. And their lives have, you know, many of them have been on a journey for years. And so that's always something that they find really funny. They like it. Some of them really like to tell me when I was there for a longer period of time. So I was kind of a bit more a good friend to some of them, that I looked like their nephews because I looked like a little Afghan boy. So that was something they loved.
That was lovely. Now, I think that those, either they're long conversations or micro conversations, which are inclusive, and it's the human to human. Whether that you're giving and you're providing some kind of service, it's also the presence of, you know, I welcome you as a human being, you know, with your circumstances. We're talking about those two books, weren't we? You know, the American Dirt and the Four Winds, and it's the story of what does it really mean to be a refugee?
Exactly. I think the way I actually think that the Mobile Refugee Support, one of their sort of, not their slogan, but I guess a phrase that they use, as it were, is in solidarity in defiance. And it's really that concept of, when you say, what do I do in Calais? Yes, I'm there helping in the warehouse. Yes, I'm there setting up charge and, you know, making sure that guys are provided new jackets and shoes if they need. However, actually, it's about being there in solidarity with those people, and about seeing them as humans, and about standing out with them in the rain for that 3 hours that you're with them in camp, and about, you know, drinking tea with them, and about talking to them, and they might show you photographs of their families and you might do the same, because that's a very human interaction, and that's something that you would do with one of your own friends. And that's the point. It's about saying, you know what, you might be at the moment a refugee, but to me you're not a refugee, you're just a person.
And I know that you're passionately involved and concerned, and you give your time to young people. So if we can move to the project you're doing at the farm.
Yeah.
A little bit about that. So how did that begin? What is it that you do? Let's just discuss that.
Yeah. I mean, it actually began with my real inability to cycle and navigate around London, because I was trying to cycle back from Waterloo. This was when I was living in central London, and ended up down some dark street, which I didn't know existed around Waterloo, because there seems to be lights everywhere else, and came next to the thing that said Oasis Hub Waterloo. It seemed like a big creative space. It almost looked like a festival. And then I started smelling, and I was like, this is definitely, it smells like a farm. Like, I live in the countryside generally. So I was like, this is definitely, where am I? And so I went in and effectively came across this farm called Oasis Farm Waterloo. Now, Oasis Hub Waterloo is basically a community sort of support network, which has embedded itself for the past 15 years or so in the Waterloo community in order to provide opportunities for people. It's got volunteers. I think it works in conjunction with the local schools and churches. It runs kind of carnivals in the area. It does lots of outreach work. It works with lots of young people. They have a partnership with something called Jamie's Farm, which is another charity that works, which has farms across the UK that uses farms for outreach and young people's education purposes. Now, in the Waterloo Jamie's Farm, they actually use the space very much for this purpose, for young people from different schools in the London area to come and do sessions and kind of outreach activities at the farm. I've been really involved in these education days with a few different schools and academies, one of which is a learning partnership in Haringey, and that's specifically for people who are excluded from school.
And what kind of activities do you do with them?
So we do, well, it's a really amazing blend of, I suppose, sort of therapy and, well, not therapy in and of itself, but, you know, a therapeutic approach to thinking about your feelings. So people will come in and that will sit around a table and they'll have, everyone's given some fruit if they want fruit. And then they'd give themselves a score out of 10 as to how they're feeling and why they're feeling that way. We might do things like writing gratitude cards or marking how confident you feel to, you know, muck out a guinea pig or a goat versus stand up to a bully or try a different food or something like that. So we do those sorts of really kind of interesting activities at the beginning that really just help kind of set the mood, set the pace and understand how everyone is and how people need to be treated that session. And then we would do things like working, as I said, mucking out the sheep and the goats, maybe doing composting. That was always a kind of a favorite of some of the boys after they got into it, but you did have some of them literally kind of gagging on the muck heap as it was steaming. I didn't know compost heaps actually properly steamed, but they do. So we did that. I always somehow ended up doing the farm jobs with the kids. I never was the one doing the other nice activities, but we also did things like pottery and cooking. There's a kitchen on the site, so a couple of the kids would do some cooking during each session, and then we'd all come back in to the barn at the end of the session, and again they redo their scores out of 10. Literally, I think every single time I've been there, all of the scores have gone up, and again there's a little reflection, and then we all eat whatever has been made in the kitchen.
So it's an opportunity for them to develop the language of their feelings, of interactivity, of inclusivity. Yeah. And do they come back several times? How does it work?
They're effectively on programs, so a program tends to be between 5 and 6 weeks, so they'll come for 5 consecutive mornings or afternoons in their week.
And what would you say, from your experience of working with these young people, what would you say that they take away? What's their, I know they feel different, but in impact in their lives, what would you say that would be?
I think, going back to what we were talking about before, every single one who leaves the farm has been pushed out of their comfort zone in some way. They have had to, and that starts with dealing with animal poo, and that starts with, you know, maybe being cold on the farm. You know, these are city kids. They're not used to being sat on a farm and just being cold. And I think also they've been a part of the group. They've taken part in the activities. They haven't necessarily done the activities with their close friends because they're broken up into different pairs or threes every week. They haven't necessarily always done the activities they wanted to do because we sort of rotate around what they're doing. And I mean, to give a real example, we, as part of some of the work I do at home, which uses horses for, again, to work with young people and those who are vulnerable, we have taken a couple of small ponies up to the farm. So we literally had you know, my mum drove a horse lorry past Buckingham Palace, and I think we took a bit of a, I think our Google map went a bit wrong. I don't think it was meant to take us quite that centrally, but we literally drove past Buckingham Palace, past the London Eye with this horse box. But on the farm, that for the children, some of them had never seen horse before. And so that's a new experience. And the last time I was actually there, there were two boys who had been on the program, and they before that date hadn't either of them ever taken their hoods down. And one of them I'd heard say about two words in 6 weeks. And during this session, there was a particular orange pony who's my favorite pony called Wiz. And they decided they took quite a liking to Wiz. Wiz is a 4-year-old pony and he's a boy. So he's like a real typical, he's basically a horse version of them, like a bit of a bullshy, annoying teenage boy. And they just ran up and down the farm with him, up and down the farm with him. And they had the time of their lives. They were then feeding him. They were worried about if he was getting hungry, if he was eating too much. They were doing all sorts. So then some of the girls were making him like these bread and apple mash pony pudding things. So the whole thing is really, I think, those are very new experiences in terms of what they are, but it's also about kind of caring and giving to these animals, making food for each other, you know, making pottery and learning that new skill. So there's a lot there which they don't necessarily do or even have access to at school.
And discovering more about themselves as you've been pushing out the comfort zone, finding the language, doing things that they're not used to doing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of circles back to what you said, what's it like being a volunteer? Because the volunteer gets to experience all of that too.
100%. I think that I get as much out of it as they do, but just different things. And, you know, we, like your phrase, showing up, you know, you show up for maybe slightly different reasons, but actually I think the outcome is really positive for every single person involved, including the goats who get, you know, puddings and lots of treats.
Absolutely. So we're standing on the precipice of a brand new year, and there's, for many reasons, so much uncertainty, and I think what it means to be human, and that's a very big question. Getting involved, showing up, volunteering, what would your message be to people listening to this? You know, this is your experience of dedicating a lot of time to volunteering activities. What would your message be for 2022?
I think it would be that everyone should genuinely believe that they have something to give, because you do. And actually, it can all just start with a conversation, just looking around you and just having a chat with people. Those who, you know, that might be someone who, a homeless person who's sitting outside of Tesco's. Doing things like that is so important, I think, to just kind of starting to realize that you can have such easy human experiences that are really meaningful. And that's the kind of attitude you take into any volunteering that you do. Showing up, being human, understanding that, you know, you're there for a reason. Those who are there to receive whatever kind of volunteering you're offering are there for a reason, and you'll probably get lots out of it.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? It's learning and understanding that life can be very precarious, and we never know what situation we're going to find ourselves in. So there's this being there for each other in life circumstances.
Yeah. 100%. I've got some amazing friends from volunteering, both other volunteers and those I've worked with. And I think that that's definitely kind of testament to why other people should just definitely give it a go.
From what you're saying, that you get, I know it's not for a selfish reason, but there's a lot you get out of it. You know, apart from the good feeling that you're helping, there's also lots of other things that you get out of this, of doing that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question that when you were with the refugees in Calais, apart from the physical things and you were speaking to them, what was your impression, you know, was there several impressions, or was there something in particular that changed your mind about, I don't know, the plight of refugees in your work with them?
I think to me, it kind of all comes back to the same thing, in that that real humanness, mm-hmm. that these are people who are in desperate situations. They are fleeing really difficult circumstances in their own countries. They're fleeing war, they're fleeing political conflict. They don't have choices in the same way that, you know, you or I might be used to having. And I think that therefore, actually just meeting these people where they're at and really seeing them as human, is the impression that I got. And I think that kind of progressed as I went there more regularly. But that real difference, like I was saying earlier, between, oh, you're going to Calais, oh, be careful, versus actually when you're there realizing, yes, of course, you need to be careful, but you need to be careful when you're crossing the road in London. You're in a different situation, but you're still with people, and these people are actually not necessarily dissimilar from people who you might be talking to in London. They just have in a completely different and really difficult situation. However, that doesn't make them any less human. And I think that's like my big takeaway about the work I do in Northern France.
And so one last question is, you talked about access to opportunity being a really important thing.
Yeah.
And I know that's also something you do in your job.
Yeah.
You know, you work in talent and finding talent and putting people in the right places. Access to opportunity for people, not trying to solve all the world's problems in this, but if we took one piece of learning from this, or one action, one thing that we can do, what would you see that in that space of access to opportunity?
I think I would say, think about your own skills and your own passions, and then have a really good think about how you can use those to have a positive impact. And I think that if you do that, you can think about that in a way where you start volunteering, mm-hmm. but you can also think about that in a way that you look to set something up, or you look to spend an hour a week more visiting your grandparents, or you look to do something directly within your community, or as we've spoken about, maybe you speak more to kind of homeless people outside supermarkets. You see, there are so many different things that you can do. And I think one of the other things about volunteering is, like, it doesn't have to be a kind of one size fits all. You can do, as we've talked about, I volunteer with multiple different organizations, and you can, you know, give different amounts of time. You don't need to see it as something. I think the important thing to remember is that, like, volunteering isn't a job, so it is as important that you show commitment for whatever you commit to. However, it's not something you're necessarily locked in by a contract to for, you know, the next 2 or 3 years of your life. You might do, like I'm doing on the farm, a program of 6 weeks, and then decide, actually, I want to do something else now. And I think that by doing that, you sort of start to almost build up like a bit of a portfolio as well, and increase your own skills and confidence. But I think it definitely goes back to what you have to offer.
I think it's definitely very evident that this is part of your value set. But I think if you see this as an approach to living, an approach to life, and that what you do can make a difference. I remember a colleague of mine who was working with people, and somebody said, you know, what does the difference does that might make? What difference does, you know, being nice to one person make? And he quoted this this little story about a man walking. A little boy was throwing some stranded starfish that were on the beach, and he was throwing them back into the ocean. And someone said to him, you know, you're wasting your time. They're all going to die. What are you doing? And he just picked up one of the starfish, and he said, I saved that one. And then he picked up another one, and I saved that one. So is that focus on, you know, yourself, what can you give? And that does make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think if you've made a difference to, you know, one or two of those many, probably hundreds of refugees that I've worked with, or similarly to, you know, the like dozens of children that I've worked with, if, you know, two or three of them go away after a program and think, you know what, that was actually really, I learned X at the farm, then your showing up has had a positive impact.
So Izzy, can you just mention, I will put them in the show notes as well, the organisations that you mentioned in this podcast. So first of all was the Mobile Refugee, and there was the, I think, Oliver's Farm.
Mobile Refugee Support is the organisation I work for in Northern France, and Oasis Farm Waterloo is the farm that I'm working with in Waterloo. There's also actually something really fantastic called the Befrienders organization, and that works again in the London area and pairs people up with those who have come to the UK who have been refugees or have sought asylum and who are lonely and who might want someone to go around London with or go around their local area with, a sort of a friend, as it were. That's a good program as well.
What a wonderful initiative. You know, it's just that, meet somebody and make a new friend. So we'll put that in the show notes as well. Izzy, I just want to say a big thank you. Thank you for so much for being an inspiring person. And for working with your heart and for making a big difference to a lot of people's lives.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Kathy. It's been really nice to talk to you. And I've been, very honoured. I've never done a podcast before, so thank you.
So there you are. There's the message. Just get involved. Just push your comfort zones. For everything we give, you can make a difference to someone's life and you don't even know how.
Exactly.
Very informative. Thanks, Izzy.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the RebChat Inside Stories series. We hope you enjoyed it. To feature your inside story, contact us at www.rebcatcreations.com or follow us on Instagram at RebCatCreations.